This is Geek Tank, and I only listen to it because my son's on it.
Put your red shirt on and your brown coat too. Everybody's joining the crew at the Geek Tank. At the Geek Tank. Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Hi, I'm Guy.
Hi, I'm Troy.
And I'm Dave.
And this is Geek Tank on the Go.
Your commuter-sized podcast, small enough to put in a box to impress people, but not so big that it gets in the way when you're driving.
Yeah, it's important. Well, today we have our special guest, and you heard him just a few seconds ago on the opening credits. This is Dave Coyle, who is the guy who created our theme song, which we love so much.
Yes.
Hello, I'm David.
Yeah. So,
strangely enough, we have him here not to do the theme song.
Well, no, yeah, that's true.
But he's definitely a geek and loves movies and comics.
And a dear friend.
I love movies and comics. I've broken the bank a few times collecting comics in the past. And had to stop, but then I had to break the bank trying to get caught up again. And but movies, I break the bank on that regularly, just weekly.
Because movies are so expensive in the millions of dollars, so
they are.
Yeah, well, he has to break the bank every time.
I pay for the entire film. You see, you guys get these cheap tickets because I actually put up millions of dollars just to see the movies there. In some places they might call me a producer.
Right.
Other places they call him a jerk.
Right.
Or maybe even a liar.
It could be anything.
No, but
a geek.
Definitely a geek.
We're here.
Definitely geeks.
Our topic for today is comics, and we're going to look at three different aspects of comics. We're going to look at the comic book itself, and we're going to look at TV shows that are based off of comic books, and then movies based off of comics. And to narrow it down somewhat, we're going to do kind of a Marvel versus DC, sort of a comparison of the two. And even within that, it's still a gigantic topic, so we're bound to miss titles. We're bound to miss certain ones, maybe miss your favorite comic title. So we're going to explore it the best we can within the time and the restraints that we have.
Right. And this is an area where I am weakest, because I didn't get into American comics until I was in my 30s. And so
it was
a joke, apparently.
Well, but isn't there Marvel and DC manga?
There were, but I didn't like them that much because in the 80s, okay. Well, in the 80s, what we had was we had people who were just starting to figure out how to draw manga, mm-hmm. here in America. And so you had these artists who were, they still looked American, mm-hmm. like the line work was still American and the angles and things like that. Manga has always been much more of a gentler sort of style. The lines are much thinner, and they're more, you know, it's a refined style, in my opinion. And so it took American artists a while to kind of catch on, because they were learning all of their techniques that were American. So DC and Marvel would put out, like, there was a manga, Star Wars, that came out back then, and it was just felt to me like it was big and bulky and kind of weighty, and there was no other real way to explain it. But yeah, so anyway. I was in my 20s. I was just very stuck in a rut as far as what I liked artistically,
uh-huh.
and so it took me until my 30s to grow up and say, "Oh wait, there's real value here to these."
Did you think that the American style was just crap then?
I was just totally.
It was the 80s too. You know, my experience with the 80s was that the art in the 80s seemed kind of
weak.
It did seem kind of weak, because I as I got older, I started getting into I would read the Essentials series of Marvel, which are just black and white reprints. And maybe part of the reason that they looked so good was because the coloring wasn't there.
Yeah.
You know, it was just inks. And I know that, I'm going to forget all the names of the artists, but the guy who did Daredevil and...
You're looking at me, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I can't remember. But he was there were some really amazing art back then, and if you took the color away, it actually looked better.
I just recently purchased Watchmen, the complete Watchmen, and, you know, it's an essential piece of... And I was looking at it going, wow, I had forgotten how lousy the four-color process was back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And, you know, the color would bleed to the left slightly of the black and white. And
yeah.
End up with, it's not in the lines. It looks like a kindergartner colored the thing, you know?
You're not referring to Frank Miller as...
No,
he was more recent.
No. I mean, Frank Miller was an amazing designer. I mean, with the way that he would lay out stuff. But I was thinking the guy before him, one of the first, the original...
we got, like, Tim Sal, Joe Quesada? No, I'm going to say his wrong name.
No, this would be bad. That's a Quesadilla. Quesada.
Quesada.
No,
Dave
no.
Mack, Bill Everett? Bill
nope.
Everett was one of the...
Nope.
So
well, anyway, the art, I think the art, you know, when Marvel first came around, you had only a few artists that were doing everything, but they were all really, really skilled. And once you got to the 80s,
and they were fast.
There was a lot more artists because they were putting out a lot more titles, and they weren't. They were kind of skimping a little bit, and there were some of the older artists had kind of lost a little bit of the nuance they used to have.
And that's what I have always felt like with the original comics. That's sort of what I always felt like, was that looking into those original comics during the 80s, I didn't like the artwork at all, and so I was. And so I never got hooked on the stories, which would have gotten me in. Except that I also heard that the 80s stories were also kind of revamps and reprints. They didn't actually get into a renaissance until Frank Miller started putting out Dark Knight, Sin City, and that kind of stuff, where they realized they could start to edge around the comics code.
Well, for me in the 80s, the ones that caught me, and I wasn't that big of a deal with the artwork because I'm not an artist in that way, was the X-Men series, and
right.
Then you got into the Hellfire Club and the whole Phoenix saga, what mm-hmm. was going on with her, and then Wolverine's backstory and stuff. Everything Wolverine was really cool to me.
Right.
And at the same time, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had come out, which
right.
is not at all like the cartoon or the movies. When the comic book came out, it was
actually serious. The comic book was serious.
It was very serious, which was an interesting charm because they took this ridiculous concept of these turtles that were mutated and trained to become ninjas. And there was death in it and all kinds of adult type things that kids should not be reading this comic. And someone brilliant came along and said, hey, kids would love this if we put pizza in it and got rid of all the evil stuff and made millions and millions of dollars. But before all of that, when it was this underground comic, I got into that. Now, that's not Marvel or DC, so it's a little off topic. So
But X-Men was where Mariah got in, too. I mean, she was saying she was reading X-Men as a girl, too.
Well, Phoenix story was really good.
Well, the thing that was great about X-Men was that it had strong female characters.
Yep.
And we're talking about the Claremont X-Men. We're talking about the reboot, not the original X-Men, where Marvel Girl was like a...
Yeah, I'm talking about the 80s, mid-late 80s.
We're talking about, we're talking about that period where Claremont was writing.
Storm.
And strong female characters,
Storm.
An international cast, and also, you know, social conscience that was not as prevalent in the original version of the X-Men. Oh, Gene Colan was the artist I was trying to think of. He did Tomb of Dracula, Howard the Duck, and Daredevil, and those are ones that he was really, I mean, he did everything almost at one point or another, but he was a really brilliant artist, and especially good when you look at him without color, because his inks and his shadings and everything were just brilliant. And
did he do his own inking, or do you think that was part of the problem?
Well, I think that he didn't do his own inking all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not the standard for Americans.
It's not. I'm not surprised
American
that once
comics,
you remove
yeah.
the color...
But the shading, he would do a lot of shading in his pencils.
Okay.
And so the inkers would try to cut, you know, I mean, some inkers were more conscientious about it than others. But if you look at stuff that are just raw pencils, they're amazing. But it's amazing how much you lose with the colors. And the color scheme up until at least the 90s, I think, were pretty primitive. And there was a lot of great artwork that you may not have recognized. And I look at Gene Colan's work with and without the color, and it's night and day. Those black and white reprints were great.
I think you're right. I think because the four color process was so miserable, that probably would have been a big turnoff for me.
For those that don't know the four color process, you should explain that.
Four color process, printing professionally is done in four colors: cyan, magenta, yellow, and black, which is what's CMYK. And I don't know why they can't just say CMYB, but I guess because it used to be blue, and then they'd end up with BY. But anyway, bring your own bottle. Anyway, CMYK then, of course, is that the printer puts the paper through a cyan spray, which puts down all the cyan, and then it goes through a magenta spray, which puts down all the magenta, and then it goes through a yellow spray, etc., etc., etc. And so if you have one of those guns off by a little bit, you'll end up with all of the yellow offset by about a half of a millimeter or so, and that makes it look like the comics were colored by a kindergartner.
Yeah, and especially since you have to use the color mixtures to get the right in-between colors, if it's offset, that makes it
just makes it look really weird. So you end up with all kinds of stuff, and that ends up being the master plates that they would run with, and so that's why, I mean, in the 80s, that was horrible.
I thought that was a good opportunity to explain that for anybody who doesn't know.
Thank you very much.
Were we going to talk about DC versus Marvel, or do we have time?
We're going to roll into a break first. You know what? Let's real quickly. DC Comics versus Marvel Comics.
Well, DC, of course, is the granddaddy of comic books. I mean, they got the Superman was like the, I don't know if he was the first superhero, but the first significant one.
In trivia, that stands for Detective Comics.
Right. 1930s.
Yeah, and then Batman, of course. Marvel was always around in some version or another. They were Timely Comics at one point, I think right before they became Marvel, but they went through several different names, and they were always putting out a bunch of cheap knockoffs. Because that was the business back then, is they would put together cheap knockoffs, and they would just try to, through mass production, they would try to, piggyback on the popularity of other characters. I think Captain America was one of the ones that was one of the original characters they had that was back in, around the time of Superman
and
Batman.
Because it was to help promote fighting the war.
Yeah, but that was part of one of the precursors to Marvel. But it wasn't until the, later in the 60s that Stan Lee and Jack Kirby invented the Marvel line.
And that really changed everything.
I was thinking about this, and I was thinking, like, what are the differences? And I remember reading an interview with John Byrne, one of the great X-Men and Fantastic Four artists and a lot of other things. And one thing that he says is the difference between Marvel and DC is that DC is all about duplication. I'm not sure if that's actually the term he used, but the idea is that they like to make the same character over and over and over again. So you have Captain Marvel, Miss Marvel, Mary Marvel, you have whatever, the Marvel dog, you have Black Adam, who is Captain Marvel, just the bad guy. You just have that. And Superman, you had Superman, Supergirl, you have Crypto, the super dog, you've got
Supercat.
And you see that time and time again. The Flash has all these different Flash characters that are even the villains, that have the same powers.
And Green Lantern.
Yeah, and Green Lantern has the whole Green Lantern core. And that's one of the main characteristics of DC. Marvel, all the characters are a lot more unique. Even if you look at something like the Asgardians, in the Thor comic, Thor's pretty unique amongst the other Asgardians. They don't all have the same power set. And that's something that is kind of a distinctive. Now, I think that's kind of, changed over time. Lately you've seen a lot of, like, the Hulk, in the Hulk, you see a lot of different types of Hulk. But even then, it's like, those are, Scar, the Hulk's son or whatever, illegitimate son, is kind of, he's a lot different than the Hulk, and then you've got A-Bomb, who's, is a lot different than... there's some different...
And then his son, or his best friend, the F-Bomb.
That's right.
That's for the R-rated version.
That's for the R-rated.
So, I only know these two because I've watched the cartoon, The Incredible Hulk Team.
Yeah.
I haven't read the comic on that, but all the different colored Hulks in the whole... Smash. S.M.A.S.
So,
in any case.
So that's the closest... I mean, there's She-Hulk, of course, but that's the closest in Marvel that you really have to that level of duplication.
Okay, so... Real quick, which is your favorite?
I was a Marvel zombie growing up in the 80s. I did start collecting DC when John Byrne went over to Superman, and I was collecting Justice League International, which I thought was really, really funny and hilarious. And so I've explored both sides, but Marvel will always be, closest to my heart.
How about you, Guy? Between the two, having a pick.
I think that it's Marvel for me, too, for the X-Men.
Okay.
But I really loved, there was the Supergirl series that we ran through right in the late, or real, real early 2000s. We ran into this revamp of Supergirl, and the art in that was so fantastic. so I think I'm all over the board. I think I follow the artists more than I do the titles.
Okay.
So that's me. So what about you?
For me, I everybody here has a butt, apparently.
I have a butt.
I lean more towards Marvel, but there are some mainstays with DC that I love. But as a whole, if I had to pick one of the two, it has to be Marvel.
Gotcha.
Unfortunately, that means we have a very biased table with a bunch of butts.
With a bunch of butts and a couple of holes.
So we should take a break here. We're over time, and we'll be back after this.
Okay.
Hi, I'm David Boop. I'm a Denver-based author, and I'm in this anthology here called Steampunk the Other Worlds. It's steampunk, but in space. Thank you for watching Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
And we're back. We're here with our special guest, David Coyle.
Hello, my name's Dave.
We're talking about Marvel versus DC, and we're going to roll into television shows now. Now, something interesting you might not know, they actually had cereals, not the kind you eat, but the kind you watch.
And, I like the Cheerios version. Yep.
And DC's first cereal was am I not got the right spot? Yeah, Adventures of Captain Marvel is what I had there. That can't be right. Captain Marvel's Marvel, isn't it?
Captain Marvel wasn't originally... Captain Marvel's interesting because he was originally a knockoff of Superman.
Oh.
And that was the Shazam version of Captain Marvel.
Oh, okay.
And that they lost a lawsuit, so Shazam became part of the DC universe.
Got it. So that 1941.
But Marvel later had a character named Captain Marvel who was an alien who really wasn't that similar to Superman. So it's a little confusing.
That makes sense. And then after that was The Adventures of Superman at 52. And then for Marvel, their very first one was Captain America in 1944, was a serial. And I watched a little bit of that this morning. It's interesting. It's got your classic 1944 movie feel.
Right.
So it would not hold today's teenagers. Too much talking, too much story, not enough fighting and special effects.
Right.
And then as far as movies go, they went a long way until they hit... Well, then they hit TV. Their first TV one that I found was Amazing Spider-Man 1977, which, well, as a kid, that was one of the ones I
watched. Oh, yeah.
Spider-Man.
Because before Spider-Man. That was Batman, and so the...
Well, you're not talking about the cartoon, though.
No, I'm talking about the live TV show.
Because the cartoon was... They had a bunch of cartoons, you know. We remember the Spider-Man theme song.
Yeah.
But, there's also that Captain America throws his mighty shield or whatever,
Who oppose him must yield... Or something like that.
Yeah, and then there's like the Thor. There was a Thor one too. There was a bunch of those. Do you guys remember the Fantastic Four cartoon with Herbie?
Yes. Yes.
Because they couldn't have anybody on fire on Saturday morning TV shows.
They're most of them are on YouTube. They're worth checking out because they're hilarious.
Yeah.
It's where the animation was expensive, so they'd have to just animate moving their mouth.
So I really, real quickly, because that's the second time that's happened in the last 10 minutes.
Okay.
We're at our favorite Starbucks.
Yes.
And we're on the other side of the Starbucks near the drive-thru. And during this podcast, twice... Somebody has gotten out of their car to get into the back seat or the trunk at the same spot over here to get their purse out, because apparently they left their purse in the back of the vehicle or whatever. But once was like, oh, that's interesting. Twice I'm starting to go, no, wait a minute. It's only been 30 minutes.
Wait a second. You got to take into account that it's snowing outside and that they may feel that it's not as waterproof in the front seat as it is in the trunk.
That's true. That must be what it is.
CSA skills would be that maybe they don't like to take the purse in everywhere they go, and in order to limit crime by leaving it in the front seat, they put it in the trunk.
Well, that's what I do with, you
and Kai.
All the time. Kai, that's what I do. I put Kai in the trunk all the time.
This needs to be cut out and put into a commercial.
Well, but this is actually an interesting question. You know, where do comic book characters put their stuff? You know, Spider-Man webs up his clothes and his wallet and stuff and puts it in his backpack.
Yep.
You know, Batman's got a little pouch in his cape, is my understanding.
A little pouch. He's got the utility belt.
Yeah, but you can't stuff your wallet in a utility belt.
Oh, yeah, you can.
No, he's got a pouch.
He's got a utility belt.
I think he's got a pouch.
I'm to this day.
Yeah, well, where does Superman keep his wallet? I mean, think about it.
He just eats him.
He throws it so high and times it perfectly that when he comes back, he catches it.
Yeah.
And back up.
It's just in orbit.
It's orbiting the sun.
it just
goes out there.
I am this day extremely disappointed that the hip pouches got their horrible fashion taboo that they were, because they were the step to utility belts of becoming a normal day thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish utility belts was fashionably acceptable to wear.
Yeah, because I'd wear them too.
I'd have a utility belt all the time.
But instead, the 90s ruined everything.
Yeah, if you wear a hip pouch, it's horrible.
Yeah, yeah. Fashion's back to no. Don't be convenient or useful.
No,
that's been true for women for a long, long, long time, and definitely is. Anyway,
get back on topic. Let's look at TV shows real quick. I got an idea. Your favorite Marvel and your least favorite Marvel TV show, and then your favorite DC and least favorite DC show. We'll start with our guest, David, if he's ready. If not, he can defer to Guy.
I defer to Guy.
Well, I mean, I liked Bill Bixby's Hulk. I mean, that was definitely one that, you know, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. and that sound whenever he was about to turn into Lou Ferrigno.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, the whole thing is that I remember watching that with my dad at night. For some reason, I don't know why that stands out.
But that makes it your favorite.
That makes it my favorite, mostly because of what happened around it. And sure. Bill Bixby was, there was something really tormented about Bill Bixby. I mean, he really did pull off
good acting.
A good acting job on that. He felt really, in the 70s, when everything was really cheesy and we had Gil Gerard's, you know, Buck Rogers and and Twiggy and stuff like that. It was like, you know, he was pulling off a very realistic version, in my opinion, because I always felt for him. So that one's my favorite. Least favorite Marvel is kind of hard because I actually don't
watch enough.
I didn't watch enough. So, I mean, because really, we've pretty much got the Hulk, Spider-Man, and then a whole bunch of cartoons that I watched.
Well, I'm including stuff today.
Oh, including stuff today.
Everything up until now for TV shows.
See, I of the old school stuff, I would totally say the Hulk. I mean, that was definitely one of my favorites as a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked Spider-Man, but yeah, and I.
It wasn't as rich.
But you know, today it's like, it's a guilty pleasure, but I watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. a lot.
I love
S.H.I.E.L.D.
And
it's like, I think it's actually objectively kind of a bad show, but it's...
Really?
But I'm enthralled because I'm a Marvel fan. I regret to say that I have not seen Daredevil.
I haven't either.
Or, what is it, Jessica Jones. I haven't seen either of those.
I really want to
because I've heard how good
they
are. Yeah,
because I'll jump in here now and say that Daredevil, especially second season, because I'm a big fan of The Punisher, my favorite now that's on. And all the Netflix ones, Jessica Jones, I'm looking forward to anything Netflix does, Marvel, because they've just been amazing stories. So they're my favorite Marvels.
What do you guys think about the way that Marvel and DC are handling their TV shows, in that Marvel has it integrated with the movies universe, and DC has it separate?
And they even are doing separate actors.
Yeah, that is interesting.
That's what I mean, yeah. It's like the...
I don't know.
It's hard to... I mean, I'm assuming they made that decision based off of money and not off of good storytelling. But I really don't know. I'm not in the inside loop with that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, now that we're talking about this, I was just thinking about the Supergirl series, which apparently got picked up.
Oh, yeah. They had a crossover with The Flash.
Where they have the classic race to see
And I've been wanting to see that for a while, and now that I've got CBS All Access, I might actually be able to... Because I gotta prep up for Star Trek, which... still burns me a little.
We forgot about the Batman TV show.
Oh, yeah.
How can
that's
we forget
classic.
About that? That's the
Adam
best.
West.
That's
well,
the no, best.
Well, that'd be your favorite DC then.
Yeah, favorite DC, yeah.
Because favorite DC, favorite Marvel.
Yeah, because that's. Even, what's so funny is how dynamic Batman has been as a character. If you think about that, I mean, you go from Michael Keaton's Batman to Adam West's Batman, and you just look at the two of them. Mm-hmm. It's the same character, but you love Adam West Batman for just the serious cheese factor.
Yeah.
And and what's so funny is, by being cheesy, it's timeless.
Yeah. What's interesting about it is that they really, you know, it's not like comic books of the time were comedies. They were cheesy, but I don't think they were quite cheesy.
Didn't mean
they weren't campy. They were not intended, they were not campy. And by going really campy with the TV show, and in a way kind of maybe disrespecting the characters in a way, they actually made something, they still managed to do something artistically interesting enough that it stands the test of time.
For me, my favorite DC would actually be the animated Batman the Animated Series, which was the first release.
That makes sense.
Because
that's Bruce Timm.
And who's
one of my favorite artists. So.
Yeah, and Bill Conroy? Wait, Conroy. I forgot the name of the guy, right? It ran away from my head. But to me, that's the voice of Batman. The guy who did the animated voice.
Kevin Conroy.
Thank you, Kevin Conroy. And then we had actually Mark Hamill, Skywalker,
being
the voice of the Joker.
Amazingly.
But the writing was great. The art was true to form. It blew me away great that was.
And that was the first time I'd ever been exposed to Bruce Timm's art. And so, I mean, now I follow him all over the place. I'm stalking him.
You've got a restraining order.
I've got a restraining order against me from Bruce Timm for stalking him. But yeah, I mean, I love his artwork, and it's because of
the animated series. Yeah, it's hard to pick a worst because I don't watch enough. I just watched the very first episode of Arrow and the very first episode of Flash to kind of get a feel for it. And the first episode of Flash apparently happens after a certain number of seasons of Arrow because it's.
They're supposed to be in the same universe, right?
They are the same universe, and they weren't that bad.
It's not that bad.
The Flash, I saw a few episodes of The Flash. I thought it was pretty good. Arrow was fine. It's just I didn't like the cinematography or the way that they were coloring everything was just a little bit too claustrophobic. But I thought Smallville I thought was really kind of fun. That was a really fun show. I mean, I got into it for a few seasons. I actually liked it.
I have to say something about Smallville.
Yeah, well, it's like a super soap opera version.
Oh, I was fine with it, but there's this one episode where Lana Lang. She was played by the totally forgot her name, but she and Mrs. Kent,
Kristen Crook.
They kill a monster guy in the barn. I forget what episode it was.
Who
but
does?
The two of them.
Lana Lang and Superman?
Superman's not there.
Oh.
It's just the mother and the girl. They kill this mobster because they're being held hostage and all this action's going on. Nobody knows about it. It's never referred to again. So my wife and I are like, well, they must have buried the body in the barn and it's decided we're never telling anyone this happened. Because it was never resolved or anything. And so it was just really bizarre. But it was amazing how stupid and socially awkward Superman was in that show, and it was really not about superheroes. It was about how to deal with socially awkward situations, which is what Buffy was about.
Yeah. Also, point out that Smallville had the best depiction of Lex Luthor ever.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, there's really,
it is really cool.
He's never been depicted better.
Speaking of weird campy versions that weren't that campy, The Adventures of Lois and Clark.
Oh yeah.
With Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher. We used to watch that religiously. The Greenwood crew would watch that religiously because it had the moonlighting thing going for it, you know, like moonlighting from the
80s. Yeah. Sybil Shepherd and Bruce Willis, right?
Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd. It was just campy enough to be fun, but not campy, so campy that it became campy. You know, they could get serious with it, they could get down really serious with it, but then they could get really bizarre, and there was one bad guy, and I can't remember his name now. We loved him because he'd break the fourth wall. It was the first time I'd ever heard the term "break the fourth wall."
So it's like a DC version of Deadpool.
Yeah, it was like a DC version of Deadpool, except that he was totally over the top. And he there was a series of episodes where he captured H.G. Wells from the future.
Oh,
and in the future it was a utopia because of Superman, and he hated that. So he went back in time to kill Superman because then it wouldn't be a utopia because he couldn't cause any chaos because everybody figured out how to stop chaos because of Superman. So his whole thing, but I mean the best scene ever with him was that he runs up to Lois Lane, he finally captures Lois Lane, and he, you know, he has H.G. Wells, his time machine, that's how he got there. And so he goes, "Herbert, let me borrow your glasses," and he takes his glasses and he goes, I'm Superman, no. I'm a mild-mannered reporter. You know, mild-mannered reporter? Superhero. Hello? Duh. How dumb was she? You know, which was really funny because that's always been one of the silly things about Superman is that you can tell. How can you not tell that...
You see the Henry Cavill, who plays Superman in the movies?
I saw that.
He did his thing where he actually went wearing a Superman t-shirt and walked around Times Square.
Nobody
knew who he was. Now, I don't know that that's the same thing because it could just be that people just don't recognize Henry Cavill. But he does look like Superman, you know.
Right.
So maybe it's like Superman's too generic looking.
Well, and maybe it was. I don't know. I don't think...
It was funny to the viewers.
It
was a nod to the audience.
And this would lead us to the movies, which is a great time
Real quick, though.
No.
John Sable. Anybody ever see Sable?
Yeah.
You remember that show?
I remember they spent like 5 minutes every episode just applying the makeup. He had the little mask that was built. It was sort of like Manimal.
So John Sable, for a guy who I think doesn't know.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I believe it was a Marvel. Was it Marvel or DC?
I'm not sure.
I know it was one of the two big ones. He was kind of like the Punisher without being so graphically violent.
Oh.
But he did shoot people. His thing was he was like acrobatical and had a gun. He didn't have superpowers. And they actually shot one episode with Gene Simmons playing the main character, and then they decided he was too scary looking, so they recast him and then shot a season with this other guy. However, because it was on TV, he never had his gun loaded. His thing was he scared people with his giant gun, but never shot anybody.
Yep.
Now imagine if they did that with the Punisher. They changed the character so drastically, and it did because it's supposed to be an assassin, mercenary,
or Deadpool.
Or Deadpool. Yeah, let's do a G-rated version of Deadpool.
But do you remember
it's,
like
it's 80s, 4 seconds long? Yeah.
Do you remember 80s superheroes like Manimal and Automan?
Yeah,
and they would always spend all this. They would spend a long like 5 minute suite where everybody was just prepping to get ready. You know?
It was the montage.
Ready. Yeah, and the Manimal thing would just montage. Be like very painful to watch as he's slowly turning into the Panther, and you know Automan is getting into his car and it's zip 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 all the lights. Anyway,
in case I had to bring up John Sable because that's
I remember Sable.
All right,
okay, we'll head off to a break and we'll be right back to talk about movies after this. We're back. We're front. We're here with Dave Coyle.
Hi, I'm Dave.
And he's our musical genius who does the opening and ending credits of the show and everything like that. But he's also a big comic book fan, which is good because...
And movies.
Comic aspect field. Comic geek. He's a comic geek.
Comic to screams.
It occurs to me that, like, half of the comics that are in my library came from your comics whenever... You had to move and you were selling everything and we were like, oh, we'll take that that, which is, you know, that's not to say that...
If you ever want to read them again,
they're in my library.
What, are you holding them hostage? What are your demands?
That you come over.
Yeah, come visit once or twice.
Oh, I actually have to socialize? What the hell?
No, you can go hide in the geek cave.
Oh, the basement. To the geek cave
to read comics, which is what it's all about.
So movies.
I have to confess that I have not seen all of the movies, but I've seen a heck more movies than I have the TV shows. But I have still not seen Superman vs. Batman because 80%
really?
Of my friends on Facebook hate it. Although there's a good 20% that say no, it's good. And so I will see it eventually, but I'm hesitant to spend more than $3 or $4 to go see it.
You know, I thought it was... It followed a lot of the theme of Man of Steel in that you're treating Superman like an alien. And it's really exploring how he appears as an alien, how godlike he appears. And the movie's really centered around Batman. Batman's the main character, and we're sort of observing Superman through the eyes of Batman. And you have this godlike creature, and he's just a complete game changer in the world. And I really appreciated that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. That being said, it's narratively a big jumble. They compress too many things into it, and Lex Luthor should not have been the villain. It's an interesting villain, but he shouldn't be called Lex Luthor.
You know, one of the complaints I heard is he's a horrible variation of him.
He's
like the Riddler or something like that.
Well, he should be a different character. I mean, it's not like he's a bad villain. He shouldn't be Lex Luthor. Because that's just going to piss off your base. Upset your base. And
sweet, I'll go bleep that out. That'd be awesome.
Sorry, guys.
I'll bleep this out too.
But okay. What did you think of it? Did you see it?
I haven't seen it. I haven't even seen Man of Steel.
What was the last comic book movie you guys saw?
Deadpool. I haven't seen Deadpool either. Part of this is a combination of I'm an artist, I make nothing, so I don't have a lot of money to go to movies. Two, and this is a thing with me, I've realized looking back on it, I never go to a movie by myself. I have to have somebody with me so we can talk about it. So I don't think I have ever gone to a movie by myself.
Which is interesting now in this age of Facebook and everything. You have that base right there already talking about it.
But it's like a thing. It's like a weird like aspect of my personality. I don't like to go to movies by myself.
Now, although Deadpool was the last one.
Have to leave Mariah with my son every time I go to the movies without her, so I feel bad.
Yeah, you got another 10 years before you can start taking him to some of these movies.
Right, and so either I take Kai with me, which, Deadpool? No. Or we leave Kai with Mariah and then later on go, I feel bad because I left, because Mariah probably wanted to see Deadpool too. You know, the problem, this is the drawback to marrying a geek. Is that everything I want? We all want to do the same stuff, and
so who watches the kids?
Right, who abandons the kid? Well, and the one that we normally leave Kai with is Kevin, our engineer, and he wants to go see the Deadpool movie too.
who watches the Watchmen.
So you have to have to burn one of your friendships in order to go see the stuff. So that automatically takes one person out of the equation. Yeah.
So that's why I don't see a lot of movies right now. It's a little bit more.
You have to catch them second run on TV or.
What I'll do is at night when I'm drawing, whenever I'm drawing my comics or something like that, when I'm doing that work, I'll watch them. I'll put them up on Netflix. So I wait for them to come out on Netflix.
Now, although Deadpool's the last one I saw in the theater, I did most recently see Ant-Man finally, which escaped me. Mm-hmm. I was blown away by it in the same way that, I was like, wow, this is an amazingly good movie. I'm surprised it did not get more hype.
It did really well, though.
Iron Man did the same to me, because I had very low expectations of Iron Man, because I didn't know a whole lot about it.
Yeah.
And when I saw that movie, I was like, wow, this is really... And it came out the same time that Batman...
Begins
came out.
Yeah.
And
one of the Batman.
And I liked the Batman movie, but for something about Iron Man just really, I was like, wow, I like this better. And I like Batman as a character more than I like Iron Man as a character. But the Iron Man movie is just amazing.
Avengers. That's the last one I saw.
That was 2012.
Age of Ultron.
So
I've seen Age of Ultron.
One I saw was Jungle Book, but that's not really a comic book movie.
What's the last comic book movie?
The last one I saw was Batman versus Superman.
That makes sense.
I saw Deadpool. I mean, Deadpool was great. I'm worried they're going to learn the wrong lesson from it, because they're going to decide they have to make a bunch of violent R-rated comic book movies, and they don't. I mean, it's like they really don't. But you got the Suicide Squad coming out here soon, and that's going to be also anti-heroes.
It's getting a lot of villains.
What's interesting is that I have become more interested in Harley recently. I drew this picture of Harley Quinn at one point in time just because somebody said, "Hey, why don't you draw a picture of Harley Quinn?" Okay, yeah, cool. So I drew this Harley. And while looking through all the pictures, the reference pictures of her, I was like, hey, she's kind of interesting. I mean, she's got all these different outfits. What's this from? Well, this is from Arkham Asylum. Really? What's that about? You know, so I had
a video game.
Yeah. But I started learning about all of the aspects of the character. And then I went to her Wikipedia page and just read the character's bio. And I was like, wow, she's an interesting character.
Well, she was created for the animated show.
Right.
And then became so popular that she morphed over to the comic. Now, the thing, I loved her original story of how she was created. I had recently read the new origin story they've come up with now for the movie and Suicide Squad, and I think they're doing it in the comic as well. I'm not a fan of the new version.
Right.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to say, I'm only saying this because I love the original one. If I knew nothing about the original one, I don't see any problem with this new origin.
So is it that you don't like that she's now a Harley Davidson enthusiast? Is that what upsets you?
That's what bothers me.
They turn her into a transformer that can become a Harley Davidson motorcycle.
Doop, 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 doop.
Yep. That's an issue.
And in fact, all the scenes with her are directed by Michael Bay.
Constant explosions.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about how successful do you think DC has been in translating their stuff versus Marvel? And keeping in mind that Marvel is not just one studio. Marvel Studios versus Fox versus,
Well, what's interesting, because they have the whole split between mutants and not mutants.
Yeah.
And if they could figure out a way to get past that hiccup, I think they would dominate all over the movie screens.
Oh,
yeah.
And it'd just be such a fangasm for everyone that to have Wolverine and Deadpool in the same fight scene and that, because they're classic enemies.
Well, actually, they actually are on the same studio. Deadpool and Wolverine could be in the same movie, so that's actually a possibility.
I thought they had to. There's certain ways that they couldn't call them mutants, though. They had to call them.
No. That's it. You see, Marvel Studios has the Avengers stuff.
Okay.
So all the Avengers stuff, but you actually in Deadpool you had Colossus, who's an X-Man. Mm-hmm. So you automatically have a merging of the universe.
I thought there was some issue with that legally, though. Still.
It wasn't a legal issue; it was a cost issue. Yeah. Apparently, they were going to have. Well, I don't know that they were actually going to do it, but apparently, I heard that they may have talked to Hugh Jackman, but he was going to be too expensive for the film. Oh. So that's why they didn't have it. They made a joke in the movie that that's why they had Colossus. But I'm glad they had Colossus, because Colossus needs more screen time. They're in the same...
I know what you're talking
Fantastic
about. There's
Four,
something about that I've heard, too.
Fantastic Four, X-Men, and Deadpool are all in the same... under the same studio. And so basically, I think the agreement they have is that if a character originates in one of those comics, then they that studio owns them, more or less. Now, it's not 100%. You get that Quicksilver situation, right, where Quicksilver was in two different movies because Quicksilver is so important to the Avengers and also so important to X-Men. And so they split the rights to that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, and this is a spoiler alert, Quicksilver's father's Magneto, and how fast would a Voyage of Ultron ended if Magneto showed up?
Right.
I'm Ultron, you have to just crush.
Well, the thing about Magneto, well, whether he's, it's always arguable if he's really the father or not, because it's soap opera.
That'll be on the next Springer.
Yeah, so. But that's interesting, because I think if you compare Marvel Studios to DC, what they're doing, Warner Brothers, I think that Warner Brothers does a really worse job, but if you compare what they do to what Fox is doing with X-Men and Fantastic Four. I mean, you look at Fantastic Four, and they've blown Fantastic Four several times.
Yeah.
You know, Deadpool is the one that's actually been the most successful, and also the one that was most pure to the source material. Mm-hmm. And the X-Men, they've had kind of mixed success.
Right.
And I've liked those, but they're not. But I think, you know, I think it goes to show is that people really appreciate it when you stick as closely to the source material as you can.
Yeah.
Because that's what was popular to begin with. And Marvel Studios has been showing that, because they've been much more in line with purity of source material. And they've done gangbusters with it, whereas the other guys, they're still doing the old school. I mean, you look at the original X-Men when it came out, everybody's wearing black leather. You know, they try to downplay the superhero part and make it into more of a sci-fi thing.
And then they made even the joke. What did you expect to wear yellow spandex? You know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they even made that joke.
And that was because they didn't think people were ready for it. And maybe they weren't at the time.
Yeah.
But now people are totally ready for it. And it maybe doesn't make sense to have...
I think they found a happy medium.
Yeah.
Because if you look at Captain America's uniform, it's not exactly like his comic book version, but it's close enough that you get this real feel for it, and it's morphed enough that I think it makes people believe it's believable.
I think he's got that battleship gray blue
costume design. Uniform. Yeah, that's actually an interesting topic in its own right. His costume design has really gotten a lot more sophisticated, mm-hmm. and it looks a lot better. Because I mean, you know, if you were a superhero. Well, you know, these days actually people do the cosplay stuff. If we actually had real superheroes, they'd be pretty stylish.
Yeah, they would.
You know.
Yeah.
So I could do like Jessica Jones and just wear jeans and a shirt, which I love about that.
I think that's great. Yeah.
The thing that I always felt, I don't know if the audience is familiar with what a showrunner does for a TV show, but I'll let Guy take this away because I think you're most qualified.
They have a treadmill, right? They're just sort of like, let's get your heart rate up. And that sort of gets them excited and into the
and everybody
into
gets production. Into it.
Yeah, I know exactly what
I'm
a showrunner.
I'm going to say yes and because of my improv background, and I'm going to say yes and no. So I'm going to pass it over to Guy because with your
a showrunner is the person who is in charge ultimately of the entire feel of the entire show. So he would be the person who would be he or she would be the person in charge of how the guidance of the entire show, not just the director. The director is in charge of directing one episode, but they have to refer to the showrunner, and the showrunner generally runs the writer's room, wherever all the writers get together, and they start to talk about, well, in episode 5, we want to do X. Well, in episode 2, we want to do Y. Well, let's make that episode 7 so that it fits after X, you know, and stuff like that. So they're the ones that kind of move stuff around in the show so that it all feels coherent as one unit.
Right. So even though you have multiple different stories and different directors and everything, it feels like it came from the same place. And all the Marvel movies have that feel that someone sat down and said, we're going to make sure that these movies all fit in a certain line. Now, whether they do that or not, I'm not sure.
No, the fact is that they do.
Okay.
I'm glad you brought it up because there's a guy by the name of Kevin Feige who is basically the showrunner for Marvel Studios.
Well, there you go.
And he supervises all of that stuff and tries to make sure they all have the right tone, and he makes sure to hire... What's interesting about Marvel is they make a point of not just hiring great directors, but they hire directors who are fans of the material, and they don't necessarily do that in other studios. Mm-hmm. And so,
whereas the DC movies don't feel like that, they feel disjointed. They also feel like they're way late to the game.
Yeah,
they're trying to play catch up now with Marvel, and really, they're never going to catch up. They've got to come up with something original in their technique to set them apart and still be good. Which I don't know what's going
to
be that.
I think they have to kind of they jumped into the big event thing. And that was, I think, a mistake. Because, I mean, what Marvel did is they're willing to do smaller films to build the brand. And that's something that DC is not really... It doesn't look like they're real. Well, maybe they're going forward. They might be.
Yeah.
Hard to say. Well, that's, you know, so far it sounds like Marvel's won the comic book battle, the TV battle.
The war between Marvel and DC.
But again, I will preface this that, well, we are biased at Sable.
I don't know if it's... Well, TV is a little trickier because they're actually more successful, I think, in TV. You know, Arrow and The Flash are really, and Supergirl are all really popular shows. Daredevil and Jessica Jones are very popular on Netflix, but I don't know that it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s not.
Besides Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.'s, what other Marvel shows are on there? I think that's it, isn't it?
Those are the three. Well, there's Marvel shows.
I mean, non-Netflix.
Oh, non-Netflix, it's only Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., yeah.
And I think by going Netflix, you're going to see that because it frees them up so much more with what they can do with their stories.
Right.
I mean, so critically speaking, yeah, they probably do succeed more.
Well, in any case, this was an extra long show. However, we did have an extra long guest.
Yeah, that's your problem.
Extra large.
Okay.
So, okay, well, that's all the time we have for today. Talk to us on Twitter at @RMGeekTank or email us at questions@RockyMountainGeekTank.com.
You can also find us on iTunes and now on Google Play. You can also look for our videos on YouTube. Just do a search on any of those for Rocky Mountain Geek Tank.
Special thanks to our guest today, David Coyle. You can find him at David L. Coyle. That's DavidL. Coile, or at his website www.davidcoyle.com.
You forgot to say Twitter.
Yeah, you did.
And,
so right, Twitter, so you can find him at Twitter at David L. Coyle, or David his L. website www.davidcoyle.com.
Yes.
Yes.
And you hear a lot
so
of music
much for appearing on the show today.
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been fun. Well, I've been Guy.
I've been Troy.
I've been Dave.
And this is Geek Tank.
Geek Tank is a production of Fox Blade Media and is protected under the Creative Commons 3.0 license. Your hosts today were Guy S. Davis and C. Troy Floor. Kevin Weibler is our engineer. And our music was composed by David Coyle. If you like what you are hearing, consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/Foxblade. I'm Mike Davis, reminding you, who knows? The Shadow knows. Good night.